You know, singing that Jesus Loves Me reminds me of a, not, it wasn't too many years ago, as in a, in an adult men's class, and the teacher asked, can anybody name the 12 disciples? And you know, everybody's sitting there looking at each other. And I, in the back of my mind, I heard that song. There were 12 disciples. Jesus called to help him. There were 12 disciples. Jesus called to help him. Boy, can't remember the words now. Anyway, that song came out of my mind at that point in time. Jesus called to help him. Simon, Peter, Andrew, James's brother John, Philip, Thomas, Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon, Judas, and Bartholomew. So those songs that we teach our kids are important, not just so they can remember the 12 disciples, but so they can remember other truths of the Bible that are taught in those songs. And a lot of times kids get bored with some of the songs that we sing, but there's a lot of these younger songs that are teach important truths of the Bible that we need to teach those kids. And I just, that when we sang that one, it just reminded me of that time that song that I had not heard in years and years and years. And you know, there's some songs that are an easy way to memorize all the books of the Bible. That's how I memorized the books of the Bible, was there's an Old Testament song and a New Testament song, and those were ways that to help memorize those. Not that you have to memorize the books of the Bible, but it helps in finding Scripture when you can remember where they are. Before, I'm going to speak on total depravity this morning, but before I start down that road, I wanted to read a passage out of Proverbs 31, and it's kind of a law. It's a 20 verse reading, but Proverbs 31, 10 through 30. For who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and work willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ship. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it with the fruit of her hand. She planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hands to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth and delivereth girdles unto the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou exalteth them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. And then I know Mother's Day is a Hallmark holiday, but the Lord inspired those words to be written about a virtuous woman. And there should be, you know, I agree there should be a time set aside every year to remember our mothers and to be thankful for our mothers. And if your mother's still alive, be thankful for them. Grandmothers, and you know, on and on, but and your wife, because that's where the mother starts, is as a wife, and we, a lot of times, we don't head down that, we fail to be thankful. So, total depravity. And, this week, I was in a place of business, and a guy came up to me. And why he chose me, I don't know. I stand there waiting on a pizza delivery, waiting on a pizza to come out. And he comes up to me, and he's got an FBI Lord hat on, and he goes, if FBI is firmly believing in the Lord, anyway, I just caught it off the, but that was, he said, so why do you think, whose attention is God trying to get with all this flooding? You know, back when Katrina hit, several Christian leaders stood up and said, oh, God's getting them for the homosexuality and all that down in New Orleans, on and on and on and on. Now, while God may have been doing that, I don't think that we as Christians have the mind of God enough to know what He's doing with these things. And it was kind of funny because one of the guys who said that about New Orleans lives here in this area, and in the 2016 flood, his mega $1,000 home went under. So, you know, you kind of go, well, so what did you do wrong? You know, you want to go to him, what did you do wrong to have your house flood? So I think a lot of us, I think a lot of Christians need to back up from trying to determine what God, He has His way in the storms. He knows what He's doing, but for you to interpret it, I think you're treading on dangerous ground when you dare to say, well, He's doing that because of this. Why did if that's true, why did this church flood? You just got to go and take it as a whole. God is trying to get somebody's attention, but you can't point to here's. He may be getting your attention, and you know why, but you can't say He's getting Keith's attention because of this. So that was just, and it kind of got me thinking about the depravity of man. And I told Ted when he came back there a minute ago, I was going to talk about him this morning, but I won't talk about him. We're all totally depraved. We all come from Adam, and we're all totally depraved. Man is born without no redeeming quality. There is no redeeming quality in us when we are born. Proverbs 21:4 is my. Well, that went to the wrong place. Proverbs. I'm going to read the first 8 verses there. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of the water. He turneth it whithersoever he will. Every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the heart. To do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. And high look in a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked is sin. The thoughts of the diligent tend only to be plenteous, but of everyone that is hasty only want. The getting of treasure by a lying tongue is a vanity tossed to and fro of them that seeketh death. The robbery of the wicked shall destroy them because they refuse to do judgment. The way of man is forward and strange, but is for the pure his work is right. Folks, here it's talking about God is in control of everything. He controls the heart of the king. And He controls the wicked. Howsomever, He does not endorse their sin. Their sin is caused by that fall through Adam. And where it says here 21:4, and a high look and a proud heart. That proud heart is really where our biggest downfalls are. Pride goeth before a fall. Pride is the number one sin in man, because our pride is what causes the other sinful actions in our lives. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with being proud of an accomplishment in your children. There's nothing wrong with being proud of an accomplishment in your life. But when that pride consumes your every move and you fail to give credit to God for that accomplishment, that's when the fall comes. If you humble yourself and you thank God for those accomplishments, Amen. That's when God will be allow that kind of pride, a humble pride. So Gill says, "And a high look and a proud heart, the former is the sign of the latter, and commonly go together, and are both abominable to the Lord." See Psalms 101:5. "A man that looks above others and with this disdain upon them show that pride reigns in him and swells his mind with a vain opinion of himself. This may be observed in every self-righteous man." The parable of the Pharisees and publican is a comment upon it. Sometimes there may be a proud heart under a disguise of humility, but the pride of the heart is often discovered by the look of the eyes, may be rendered the elevation of the eyes and the enlargement of the heart. What he's saying there is when you take and place yourself above others through pride, that's when God will look on the heart and he will condemn your actions there. And I wanted the rest of that there. "Then the plowing of the wicked is sin." Taken literally, not that it's in itself, for it is most useful invention. Saying that actual plowing is not a sin. But the plowing that he's talking about here is when we set forth that proud heart and we plow a look that we plow that look of that pride, and we go tell everybody how proud we are of what we did and how good we did, and fail to give God credit for those things. Let's look at Psalms 58:1. One through 11. "To the chief musician, Adoshan Mitchum of David, do ye indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Do ye judge uprightly, O ye sons of men? Yea, in the heart ye work wickedness. Yea, weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf adder that stoppeth her ear, which shall not hearken to the voice of charmers, charming never so wisely. Break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. Break out the great teeth of the young lions, O Lord. Let them melt away as waters which run continually, where he bendeth his bow to shoot his arrows. Let them be as cut in pieces, as a snail which melteth away. Let every one of them pass away like the untimely birth of a woman, that they may not see the sun. Before your pots can feel the thorns, ye shall take them away as with a whirlwind, both living and in his wrath. The righteous shall rejoice when he seeth the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked, so that a man shall say, verily there is a reward for the righteous. Verily he is God that judgeth in the earth." And what I want to say there is, we as Christians can't take vengeance. Vengeance isn't ours. Vengeance is the Lord's. And here, one of the other things that comes out in this is, from the time we leave the womb, we're sinners. And these young kids, they weren't taught how to lie. I don't know of any parent that goes out of their way to teach a kid how to lie. Of course, first off, they don't have to, because they know from the word go how to lie. And I mean, before they know how to speak, they know how to lie. They want attention, they cry. There's nothing wrong with them. Is that a lie? It's a way of getting attention. But we have to accept that Christ, that when Adam fell, that's when everybody became a sinner. "The wicked are estranged from the womb, which original corruption of nature accounts for all wickedness done by men. They are conceived in sin, shaped in iniquity, and are transgressors from the womb. They are alienated from God and from that godly life, which is agreeable to him, and he requires from the knowledge and the fear of him." And where this, and as we know, if you believe the doctrines of election, as most of us here do. There's the 5 points, and I hate to use the word Calvinistic, but this is Calvinistic in nature. But listen, folks, if I don't say it often enough, don't ever claim to be Calvinistic. Calvin believed in baptizing babies, and I don't believe in that. Calvin happened to popularize the 5 points of grace: total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and perseverance of the saints. Those five foundations of the doctrines of grace is what brought him into popularity, or actually a lot of disdain from the modern Christians. He was at a Presbyterian and a baby baptizer, but this total depravity is the first thing, which leads to the second one, because if you believe in total depravity of man, the only way a totally depraved man who's dead in trespasses and sin can be saved is through unconditional election, a limited atonement, an irresistible grace, and then the perseverance of the saints is the bonus at the end there. If you're dead in trespasses and sin, the only way you can be saved is for God to wake you and bring you to the saving knowledge of Christ. So they go astray as soon as they're born, speaking lies. They are wicked from their infancy and from their youth upward in sin, which is meant by going astray as soon as they're capable of it, and which is very early. Sin soon appears in the temper and actions. Then they go out of God's way and turn everyone to their own way and walk in the broad road. I don't know of any parent that teaches their children to throw a fit, but we've all seen those youngins throw those fits. God's elect sin also, but we don't sin. Our sin's covered by the blood of Christ. Though the latter are the same by nature as the former, reprobate men and God's elect they're the same. We have the same sin nature that the unsaved person has. Their sin is unrestrained as our sin is restrained, because we have a calling upon our life by God that says you need to obey the Bible. They don't have that same calling. And oftentimes things that we know go against the Bible don't go against what a reprobate man thinks is okay. There are a lot of things that are immoral in our eyes that are completely legal. Just the way people deal with people. If you're in, you know, I've said this before, if in business you deal unjustly, maybe not illegally, but you just kind of edge the things there. We need to be known as an upright person. We need to be known as someone who, when we say something, we're going to do it. We need to be upright in the way we walk. Matthew 5:21. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old times, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Folks, We have a Bible verse here that says, thou shalt not kill. And we all know that's... And that's a legality also, at least in this country. There's other countries that thou shalt not kill doesn't mean the same thing as how we see thou shalt not kill. But you're going to face judgment if you kill someone, whether it be on this earth or in heaven. If you're saved, I don't know a lot of saved folks who go around killing, but I mean, it's possible in a moment of anger. We all get angry. And the thing is in those moments of anger, you may not actually physically kill someone, But you may kill a relationship with that anger. You may, especially if you're dealing with somebody who's not a Christian, that anger may drive them away from the church. That anger may drive them away from listening to the Word of God. In Matthew 12:33, I know I'm moving through a lot of verses here quickly, but I'm not going to comment a whole lot, but I have to comment a little bit here. 12:33-37. Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by the words thou shalt be justified, and by the words thou shalt be condemned. Here we see that, and this is from Christ, an account of what Christ had said here, that a tree, a bad tree, i.e. an unsaved person, can't bring forth good fruit. We know God can use unsaved people to change lives. But in general, the fruit of evil is evil, and the fruit of good is good. And if you want to argue with that, argue with the Bible, not with me. That's just chapter and verse. One of the guys I was reading with was trying to enforce the free will of man, his idea of free will for men here, and he really talked himself out of it in what I was reading. But there is a free will. Men do have a free will, that nature, but in our nature, let's take it this way. What I'm trying to say here is, if you're an unsaved person, there are certain things that you cannot do because God has not given you the ability to do those things. A pig can act like a lamb and eat grass and eat what a sheep eats. And a sheep won't eat trash like a pig will. And those things are the way that we see a differentiation in the nature of things. A tiger can't change its stripes. A zebra can't change its stripes. That's what they have. And those things are natural. And until Christ makes that change in our heart, until we come to that saving knowledge of Christ, we can't change our heart. We can't change our nature. Our nature is that of sin. I'm not going to read that verse there. The Spirit of God declares that every imagination of the man's heart from infancy is evil. Genesis 6:5. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thought of his heart was only evil continually. And go to 8:21 in Genesis also. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in the heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. And this is after the great flood, and where God said, I will not cover the entire earth again in water. He's done it in smaller areas, but he never went. He hasn't gone back on the rainbow promise of, I won't cover the earth in water again. So, but what he's saying here is, and the Lord smelled a sweet savor. There were those among the Christians, among the earth, who were Christians. Mm-hmm. But every man starts with a wicked heart. I just don't know how to say that in any. The total depravity is just, I mean, if you can't see it from these verses I'm bringing here, it's hard to argue with them. Psalms 14:3, and I'm gonna give us several more verses here before I finish. They that are all gone aside, they are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one.
Yeah.
Romans 3, and most of us can quote this, 3:10 and 11. How was it then reckoned when he was in circumcision or in uncircumcision, not in circumcision but in uncircumcision? That's not what I wanted, but I'll wind in 4. What did 3:11? 3:10 and 11. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. We as a natural, fallen human being cannot seek God. You just can't. There's no ability. You're dead in your trespasses and sin. Let's see, we're in all are useless, corrupt, void of the fear of God, full of fraud, bitterness, and all kinds of iniquity. The carnal mind is at enmity against God and does not even leave us the power of thinking a good thought. Romans 8:7. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be, so that then they that are in flesh cannot please God. 2 Corinthians 3:5. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. For who has made us able ministers in the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit? For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. We are not sufficient of ourselves. There is nothing in us that can cause us to come to Christ. Until God quickens us, until God awakens us, we just, I mean, like I say, there's enough verses here, and I've got a few more that I'm going to throw out here, but I just think that arguing it with anything other than verses is wrong. I think if you can argue it with enough verses, then if the person claims any kind of Christianity, it's hard for them to argue against all these verses. Now, I know how they do. They take some verses out of context, and maybe I'll... of course, I don't believe in studying the counterfeit. As I said before, we don't study the counterfeit. So why would I go and try to study what they take out of context to make these things, to make it say what they want to say? Romans 6:14, for sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under the law, but under grace. And this is after God has awakened our heart and called us to Him. Sin will no longer have dominion over you. And that's the great thing for those of us who have experienced salvation. We have that God has saved us. John 8. Boy, I did something wrong. John 8:32. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, we be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. Now sayest thou, yea, shall be made free. You know, it's kind of funny to me that they would try to claim that they'd never been in bondage after they spent years in bondage in Ethiopia, you know, in Egypt rather. Yeah, it's just like, oh man. But we see, of course, we see things with 20/20 hindsight too. Some of the stuff that we see, they didn't have the benefits of the full Bible, and they didn't have the benefits. A lot of them had never seen any portions of the Bible or small portions of the Bible. Remember, the written Bible is what Gutenberg 1649 was when we had the first
Texas. I mean, and understand, y'all, that a lot of times there's other books that people claim to be portions of the Bible, and what we include in the canon of scriptures was taken from those things and brought together, and that's a whole long study as to why they determined that certain things belonged in the Bible and why certain things didn't. One of them was nothing could be in the Bible unless it was referred to in other portions of the Bible, and so that left a lot of things out. So I'm just going to conclude with this, folks. Until Christ awakens your heart, your total depravity keeps you from becoming anything other than a depraved being. And we as a body of believers need to pray for those around us that hope that they are in the elect, pray that they are in the elect, pray that they will be awoken and brought to a saving knowledge of Christ. Ted, do you want to bring up?